Game Cola faithful, and welcome to the Game Cola podcast. This is podcast number 177. Evan Stevens, the TV show. I am your host and podcast commander, Joseph Martin, joined by...
I'm Blue Rider, and Joe, what was that?
What? What do you mean? Let everybody else introduce themselves and then criticize me.
I'm James Pelster, and this show is not being hosted by Chris Evans.
I'm John Rizzi, and I suck at that. Joe, are you okay?
I did not have a list of those
just ready at all times.
I did not have one. I thought about it. There's not a lot. The problem is I've already used, I think, all the good ones. I used Kevin. And, like, there's other names that rhyme with Kevin, but, like, it's still, like, Devin, right? Or Kevin Levin from the TV show Ben 10.
Have we said we're going to turn this podcast up to 11?
Probably.
Okay, but, like,
Probably 11 is a number.
You understand that 11 is a number.
Well, you can rhyme a number with a number.
James, see, this is why I'm podcast commander, right? Like...
Yeah, because you come up with Stevens.
You're working on, you're living on level one here of like, oh yeah, 7, 11, those rhyme. But like, you're not taking into account, they're both numbers. There's a company named that already, right? Like, these are the layers that you have to think about.
Level one is level fun.
In conclusion, Joe is very paranoid about getting sued by 7-Eleven.
There's more to
that is
it,
what I've
right?
Today.
Do you understand? Like, what if I had just said, Kevin's going to heaven? We would have just gone on with the podcast. It wouldn't have been a joke, and it wouldn't have been funny. But look, we're at like 2 minutes into the podcast, and we've already had a great round of making fun of Joseph Martin, a podcast classic. I know what I'm doing.
Content.
He is
all right
to the audience there, I guess.
Somebody animate that rant. That was beautiful.
Yeah. We should, for sure.
Look, it is time to talk about video games, you guys. It's been too long. It's been 2 months, and months are long in that sentence,
true.
In that equivalence, in that metaphor. So here's the thing. Here's the update. Here's the big news. If you missed it on the live stream. We have, Jetty and I, have Nintendo Switch Online Plus Expansion Pack because my friends, independent of anything I ever said to them, who are also on the family plan, said, hey, can we get the expansion pack? We want to play Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, depending on your regional accent. And I said, sure, we can use that for content also. And so then we did a live stream, but I've also been playing the Nintendo 64 games and the Game Boy games. And guys, video games from the late 90s to the early 2000s are weird. They hadn't really figured it out yet. I don't know if you realize this.
Do tell.
Yeah. N64 only had one analog stick to deal with, and it was
garbage. And also,
and they didn't really know how to design a 3D controller where you could use all of the buttons at the same time.
GoldenEye. The other fun thing is that because there's only one control stick on the Nintendo 64, the right control stick on the Switch is the C buttons.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I remember them.
And so a control stick for the C buttons is strange in a lot of cases, I will tell you. So, yeah, I did Super Mario 64, and I did the backwards long jump, and then I had trouble doing the backwards long jump, and I looked up, can you do the backwards long jump in the Switch? And you can't do it on the...
On the 3D
All-Stars
version.
Yeah, you can't do the All-Stars version, but you can do it on the Nintendo Switch Online version.
Oh,
so therefore,
all right.
It is
great.
Superior.
Right, because they couldn't use the same version of the game because that would mean that you have no reason to go out and buy Super Mario 3D All-Stars, even though they already killed it off.
And then I played some Banjo-Kazooie, and the first few levels were good, and then I got lost in the hub world, and I was like, I remember why we stopped doing this, and I fell off. I did also play.
World?
No, like I just stopped playing the video game. It's just I'm hip with the youths. I don't know if you picked it up on this, and I know they're slang.
I don't think that was
James,
correct.
Are you okay?
No, I'm not okay. But we're doing. I'm getting better every second.
The game that I got stuck on and I have been playing, I think, like 10 hours now. Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga.
Yes. Oh, yes.
It is a good video game. It's also interesting because, like, it is good, but they also had not figured it out yet. They had good ideas.
Yeah.
And they hadn't figured out all of them yet. Like, for things that, because I played, like, I started at Partners in Time, and I had I had played, like, the intro of the game. Like, someone had it, and I got to play the intro, but it didn't play very far through it, so I didn't really remember much beyond, like, the kind of the early events. But, like, one of the things that's weird, and I didn't realize how much I took this for granted, like, the A button, I feel like in Bowser's Inside Story, which, James, mm-hmm. I think you replayed the remake recently, so maybe you can confirm this. Mm-hmm. If you switch to as in front, it was still Luigi is B and Mario is A, right?
You couldn't switch them in Bowser's Inside Story.
Okay, so
that
you
was only a thing in Superstar Saga. In Partners in Time and Onward, you couldn't switch.
Okay, I knew you couldn't switch in Partners in Time. Yeah, the switching is weird. It doesn't flow very well.
Yeah,
because
I believe it swaps who the A button corresponds to, but then in battle it's always one thing. So yeah, I think that might have been the reason why they stopped doing the swap.
And also, like, you have so many contextual ability, like you have jump and high jump and spin and like hammer ability, but then hammer with the twist ability. And then the hand abilities. Mm-hmm. And, like, you're, like, trying to solve this. And it's like, oh, but it depends on which order they're in, what it does. And it's like, so you're, like, switching and swapping. And it's not, like, you can't always just look at the screen because sometimes they'll just, like, be facing each other. And it's like, I don't know which one is the one that's in front according to the video game.
And if their positioning is off, they won't let you do certain things. Like, if you're trying to use an ability that the bro has and he's in the back and you're trying to use an ability that affects the bro in the front, if they're like, if you turned around and so the bros are like facing each other or they're overlapping, it cancels, it doesn't let you perform the action until you move so that they're in the correct like orientation.
It's,
and it's annoying,
really jank. So like, this is, if you haven't played the Mario and Luigi series, it's like an RPG. So like, this is the overworld section where like you have these puzzles that basically evolve around, hey, these brothers can do these different things in the different contexts and you can switch which one's in front, which is really just a means to switch which set of abilities you can use and how the different, like, but you just press the L button and the R button and like cycle through them until it's the tab that you want. Mm-hmm. And then also there's battles where you have like the enemies and you're taking turns, but like in every single time you select the attack, but then you also press buttons in certain timing to like make the attack successful or better. It's kind of an evolution of Earthbound, but like a little bit more like straightforward.
It wasn't in Earthbound, I don't think. It was in, well, Mother 3 kind of had timed hits, but I think it might be a more direct evolution of Super Mario RPG.
Well, yes, that's earlier.
Right.
That's like in the middle of it. But Earthbound has some kind of timed hits, right?
I don't think Earthbound has the scrolling HP counters, but as far as I know, that's the only real-time element
maybe
to battles.
Maybe it's Mother 3. I feel like one of those games
Mother 3
had.
Definitely has timed hits where you can kind of combo with the music.
it does also inherit from Earth, and again, so does, like, not directly, but, like, it's through the chain. But, like, if an enemy comes up from behind you, that's bad, but, like, you can hit an enemy. I think that coming up from behind you is bad. That's an Earthbound too, right?
And you need to, yeah, you can come up from behind enemies in, well, I don't know, well,
Mario
enemies
RPG
can sneak
also
attack
has, like,
you. Enemies can sneak attack you in Superstar Saga, and you can get the jump on them and deal initial damage. So yeah, I think that's standard fare for several RPGs, but yeah, definitely Earthbound and Mother 3.
But I like it a lot because, like, it makes the bat, like, it can make something really simple because you really only, for the most part, have, like, three or four things you can do. One of the things is that, like, you have these bro special abilities where, like, you can do these complicated sequence of button presses. And you even have, like, different levels in the first one because they're like, all right, this is the slow motion mode where you have enough time to figure out what you're supposed to do. And then you can, like, ramp up the difficulty. But then, in effect, what happens is, like, oh, you find the best one and you just use that one all the time.
Yeah. 'Cause
there's there's like in the Mario, there's a Mario one where it's like, oh yeah, he like spins and hits multiple times. So like that one is obviously the best
actually, one. Here's the thing that I love about this is something that I find interesting about that game that they didn't do in any of the future games, to my knowledge at least, although I haven't really played much of Dream Team or Paper Jam, was that in Superstar Saga only, the bros attacks that you did, basically the special moves that cost your equivalent of magic points or SP, I think, they, or no, BP, bros points.
Yeah.
Those... if you use them enough times, Mario or Luigi, whoever initiates it, would eventually, you know, pause and think for a moment and then come up with an advanced version of the move, which was basically an alternate form. And those use different button presses in the middle of the attack to change up how it plays out. And those were they weren't always necessarily objectively better. They just, you know, sometimes they were, like, they just did more damage or they just worked better. But sometimes they were just an alternate form, you know, maybe that hit multiple enemies or they attacked in a different way or they pierced through enemies that had spikes on their heads in some way that made them different and more useful in a utility sort of way. And I thought that was really neat.
I do think, like, it's neat when you describe it, but I feel like in practice, unless you, like, go onto the wiki and, like, figure out how it works... It's too much mechanical depth focused in one kind of opaque mechanic where it's really not necessary, because the other thing about Mario, about these handheld Mario games, is that like you can also press buttons while the enemies are attacking to dodge their attacks. And if you do that perfectly, you won't take damage. So when you figure that out, it mostly just becomes, okay, how do I first, if it's a boss, like solve the puzzle of like what's the correct way to damage them and make progress? Because usually they have some kind of gimmick that makes it so you can't just attack them with your strongest attack. But then it's just, okay, how I can just last long enough and go through the cycles. I'm bringing this all around to a more general point that everyone can talk about. It is, actually, right now, I'm just going to do it right now. So what sticks out to me a lot about Mario RPG, or like these handheld RPGs, not the old one, but the old one too, to a certain extent, is that like so many turn-based RPGs and a lot of other RPGs, not all of them, but a lot of them, are basically two video games, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Isn't
that like weird, right? Like the other thing is that like in RPGs, they're called that because of the turn-based RPG battles, which is like implies like that's the meat of the video game that you're supposed to like and enjoy. And yet those RPG battles are presented as like punishment in the game, right? Like it's not like I'm going to bring it to Mega Man, right? We're all on the same page about Mega Man at this point. I've made sure of that. In Mega Man, right? Like there's enemies, right? And it's not good that there's enemies, but like the enemies are the challenge, right? Your goal, you're playing the game to like have this challenge presented to you and to defeat these enemies. And like there isn't another thing to do. Like you're not, if you went and had to fight those enemies, it's not because you did something else wrong. That's what the video game is. But in RPG battles, it's like, especially in like Mario RPG, where it's like, you can avoid most of the battles. And in fact, getting into the battles is like a punishment for not avoiding them.
Well, you still have to level up and like gain experience points and new abilities, right?
Right, but that's the pull and push, right? Because all those opportunities are still presented in the game as punishments.
Well,
do you understand what I mean? Like, it's set up so that you're like, oh, here, try to avoid these guys and their attacks. Because you can go through and not battle any of them. And I think about Pokemon, too, where it's like a lot of, like, you would have situations where it's like you've got a trainer on one side and wild grass on the other side. And it's like, oh, I have to pick which of these I want to do, because I don't want to do both, even though both are Pokemon battles, right? Because the idea exchanges, I want one dedicated battle or a potential unknown in the tall grass, right? Like,
no, unknown are usually found in the caves.
Yes, yes. Ha ha ha. You got me. Do you understand what I'm yeah, making any sense?
I understand.
It's a whole like idea or like push and pull like thing I've had with RPGs in general too, because I think it also just goes back to like RPGs stands for a role-playing game, and you're playing mm-hmm. the role like it's a tabletop RPG and whatnot. But at the same time, it's like it's also supposed to be immersive, like in the story, because I've had this problem with Final Fantasy too, where it's just it's like most of the stuff, like the good stuff you like need, like the good weapons or the good summons or whatnot, are like in side quests that you have to explore and like screw around to find and whatnot. But it's like I'm playing an RPG. I'm supposed to be role-playing as this character. This character would not go around willy-nilly to find random stuff. He would, like, stay at the task at hand. And not to mention, like, the battles are just, like, are chess games, which I have no problem with. But it's, like, that's not immersive to me. It's, like, I don't feel like I'm playing a role as, like, this character making decisions. I feel like I'm just, like, all right, on this chessboard, ready to go for this counterintuitive fight that the game kind of wants me to avoid, but not really. I don't know. It's so bizarre.
I feel like another place where I felt this strongly was in Mega Man Battle Network, where the battles were really fun and the overworld sections were bad. Because I feel like this is the other element of it, is that a lot of games don't have a good idea of what to do with the parts that aren't the RPG battle. Like Mega Man Battle Network struggles hard to find things for you to do, and most of the time it's there's a person or a thing somewhere in the entire game world that has been presented to you. Go find them, or go find five of them. And you're like, okay, well, I'm having fun with the battles at least, which is part of the reason why I stopped playing 4 as much, because I wasn't having as much fun with the battles. And so then it really became, well, now this is a punishment for not knowing exactly where in the world they decided to put these five characters, something that has happened like 2 or 3 times in the game, and I'm barely at the beginning of it.
It's kind of like, in those games at least, like the overworld sections are just kind of like padding for the RPG sections.
It's also like with Pokemon, I just want to, this is my last thought that I have about this subject. With Pokemon too, it's like, if we think about a turn-based RPG as like 2 video games, the main series Pokemon games, like one of the video games has changed completely. Like it's a completely different video game, right? You don't have these things of like, In the first, like, handheld games and the, you know, Game Boy and early DS and somewhat in the 3DS, but, like, you had these, like, overworld puzzles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you're like, oh, here's, like, oh, the tall grass and the cliff, you know, balances. And even, like, I know, like, oh, I need to have a Pokemon with this particular HM to, like, you know, pass through. But then also, like, those HMs generally had, like, a puzzle element to them. Like, oh, do I push the strength boulder in this direction or this direction? You know, do I want this item? Or do I want, like, I need to figure out how to get this boulder in the right place? Or I need to figure out how to move around on the ice to get to where I want to go, right? And, like, stuff like that is basically gone. And there's no, like, there's basically no restriction of movement except on a purely macroscopic this section is gated off, or the Pokemon here are too strong for you. And it's like a completely different video game now. And I almost wonder if like that's part of the reason why some people don't jam with it anymore, because they actually liked, like, that's a big part of the video game and it's not the same. I don't know. It seems weird, because in the way the battles are like almost exactly the same.
This is kind of where I want to give the Mario RPG series like a little bit of credit, because like in the battles, because like you said, you brought it before, it has the timing mechanics where it's like hit this button at a certain time to do a critical hit, or make sure you dodge enemy attacks by hitting a button another time. I think for me, when I was a kid, like Mario and Luigi Partners in Time was like one of the first RPGs I ever played, next to like Knights of the Old Republic. But like it was those battles specifically that got me into RPGs, because I found those battles super fun to do. Granted, I've also found them frustrating, because to this day, I still have yet to beat Partners in Time because of that final boss, which I found so hard.
Oh, jeez.
But, yeah.
And I don't mean...
I think that's what they were going for, because I can't speak the Superstar Saga, because if they treat it like it's a punishment. But I found them, like, in Partners in Time, it's just felt like an incentive to just, because it felt like the meat of the game was in those battles. And that's what I just wanted to keep doing over and over again.
Right. I don't mean to say that it's treated as a punishment because the battles felt bad. I meant, like, the way it was framed in the overworld is that it seems to be presented to you as, hey,
this is right, like, these enemies, like,
jump out at you, right? And, like, are doing attack. And some of it is, like,
surprise!
You want to make sure that if you get into a battle, that you're doing it in the advantageous, you landed an attack on them first instead of they landed an attack on you first. Like, there's an element of that. But also, like, in general, it seems like it's set up so that you shouldn't fight. Like, you shouldn't want to. It feels weird. Like, when you're in the battle, it feels good. But the moment of entering the battle feels bad because it feels like you messed up. You didn't do something right. It's like when you go to the ghost gym in Diamond and Pearl and you have the quizzes. It's not just in Diamond and Pearl, but this is the one I remember. You've got the quizzes and you're supposed to, like, answer the question and then go through the door with the correct answer. And if you go through a wrong answer door, you have to fight a trainer. And then you go through the wrong answer doors on purpose to fight more trainers because you wanted to play Pokemon, the video game. But, like, that feels bad, right? It feels weird. And they even lampshade it, I think, in Gen 6, I think it is, where, like, I think there's one character in the electric gym where they also has this sort of quiz set up where they're like, you're just answering the question wrong to fight people, aren't you? And it's like, yeah, no, that's what I'm doing. You got me.
Yeah.
But, like, that interaction feels incorrect, right? Like, the game is presenting you with this challenge of, hey, you don't have to fight these trainers if you can get the answers correct. But then it's like, but I want to fight the trainers, so why are you presenting it as a bad thing, even if the battles themselves are fun? That's more what I'm getting at. Yes. Blue, have you ever played an RPG?
I have played an RPG.
How do you feel about this conversation that we're having?
I also think it is odd to be punished with all the battles. I think you could do something cool with, like, a particularly hard battle or something. So it's not, like, a terrible idea altogether, but it is weird.
Mm-hmm. And, like, the boss battles are usually, like, the boss battles are often the most fun for a lot of RPGs because they have some sort of element of, like, oh, here's a twist on it. And, like, here's, like, your basic strategies don't work anymore. Or it's, like, a better excuse to use the cooler abilities that consume, like, not unrefillable resources, but, like, I don't want to use the big special attack on the enemies, even if it'll just save me a turn. But I will use it on the boss. And then I know, like, after the boss, I'm going to have the opportunity to, like, heal up so I can, like, spend all of my healable resources, like magic points and stuff. It also, like, it's interesting how other games have tried to answer that question, like Persona. Like, I feel like is another example where, like, they basically put an entire dating sim into their video game to be the overworld section, even though there, like, because there is some, there, it has three, Persona has three. I don't know to what extent each of those three is in all of the games, but I know Persona 5 had, like, three versions of video game, because there's, like, the dating sim, and I know you don't just date people, but, like, in dating sims, you also don't just date people.
Sometimes you date birds. Like, wait,
that's
no.
True.
There's the, like, overworld of the palace, and usually the palace in at least 5 or something like it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where you will encounter the enemies, but there's also, like, sometimes stealth challenges or, like, figure out where to go puzzles. Right? Like, it's, there aren't a lot of games where it's just the turn-based battles, right? Like, there always has to, like, as opposed to, like, Mario, like, a Mario side-scroller, where, like, yes, there's, like, the level select in, you know, New Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of other, like, mini-games, but it's not, like, a separate game. It's just, like, a framing device and, like, a opportunity to give you, like, a quick breather, but you're not, like, doing things. It's just, like, a cool way to frame the menu. Even, like, an overworld, like in Sunshine, it's, like, kind of a level, but there are parts of it that are kind of like a level, which is also still like the rest of the game. And then anything that isn't like a level is just a cool way to frame a level select menu, right? Like, it doesn't feel like it's a different game in the way that the dating sim part of Persona feels different than the RPG battle part of Persona feels different than the walking around the person's brain part of Persona.
I feel like calling it a different game, like, section is like a too broad of a term. I say we switch it to calling it B mode. Something like that.
But it's like, but like, imagine if the B plot of your favorite show was just a completely different genre.
That sounds awesome. Right?
It does sound good. And I do think that this is a strength of games in that you can kind of mix the genres like this. It's just so interesting that like RPG, like almost fundamentally has to be mixed with another genre, right? Like you have, you know, we had the mid-2000s, you know, RPG elements, right? Like that was the thing, right?
Yeah.
But it's because like just the regular turn-based RPG isn't just the game by itself. Even in tabletop RPGs, right? It's not just battle after battle after battle. I think some of them started out like that, actually. But it's like, you know, the character... stuff that would be more akin to like role playing a text adventure or a visual novel, visual in the mind.
That's what BioWare got. Yeah, that's what BioWare got famous for in like Mass Effect and Knights of the Republic. Like no one ever talks about the third person shooter segments in Mass Effect. They always talk about the conversations and the decision making. Same with Knights of the Republic. Like, yeah, it has turn-based battles and whatnot. That's not exactly the deepest thing in the world, but everyone talks about the light side, dark side path, how it influences your crew, how it influences your powers and whatnot. It's like, that's so deep and interesting and awesome. And no one talks about the combat in those games.
Right, and that's interesting, though, because, like, that feels like a situation where it's, like, it's not even, like, really mixing, right? Like,
yeah, no.
I think it should be most interesting when it kind of like mixes and like you can see the benefit of it as, you know, some of it is like as technology advances and we can kind of handle like a single system that can handle everything. Right. But like even just small things like how in Scarlet and Violet, I was like, it's not Sword and Shield. It's not future and past. It's Scarlet and Violet. The fact that, and also, you know, in Legends, but I'm picking Scarlet and Violet because it adheres more traditionally to the RPG battle format. Like, the fact that there isn't, like, a screen cut, right? Like, the camera just moves to frame it as a battle in the RPG battle, like, sort of stance. But there isn't, like, a hard cut between the two different game states, right? Like, even though that's essentially purely a framing, right? Functionally, it's exactly the same as having your screen transition and being in a different part of the video game with different mechanics. But it feels so much better when it feels like it's part of one cohesive world. You know what I mean?
Like Fallout?
Like Fallout? Question mark. Well, does Fallout... I guess what? Fallout also kind of mixes genres in that same way. And I know where we're going with this. We're gonna get there. like Bethesda games... That also feels, I guess that feels pretty integrated too, right? Like you can very easily go from like talking to someone to fighting someone.
Yeah, they're the pure definition of real-time like action RPGs.
It's just, and here, I'll bring it even closer to the segue that you're going for, John. It feels interesting how TV shows handle this versus video games, right? Like I can't think of a movie or TV show genre where it's like, oh yeah, well you can't really have that genre by itself. You have to mix it with something else. Like, that seems like a wild thing to say. But, like, that's true of, you know, an RPG. Like, you can have, like, a pure shooter game, right? Where it's just, like, the multiplayer. You have, you know, kart racing, right? Like, that's been all kart racing. A game that's just RPG battles, you can have it, but, like, almost nobody does. There's almost always something else added into it instead of battle after battle after battle.
Yeah, there's always a beat mode that gives it so much more substance because, honestly, I feel like a turn-based battle, like, after would like no matter how fun it is, would get stale after a while. Like, you'll need, like, an overworld or a beat mode or, like, some other hook to carry you through this 30-plus-hour journey.
So, Speaking of video games and TV shows and things with multiple genres, Rise In, or the opposite of it, Fallout. There was a TV show. Brilliant. There is a TV show. Is it still airing, or is it like? I mean, I'm sure it sounds like it was successful enough to get that like second season greenlit.
It was released all at once, and then second season was greenlit a week later.
Yeah. That was. I didn't see that, but like that felt like the cultural response to it was the response of, oh, this feels like a show that got greenlit like immediately after the first season was released. There's also a different vibe of like a show that gets its second season greenlit before the first season is released, which is actually usually a worse sign, because that means that season two is happening regardless of the quality of season one.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it also just means like marketing was good and it got a lot of people like excited to watch it. So, and like the ratings were good enough to watch it. For the first few
not
episodes.
Always. There are lots of bad shows that
definitely
get a
not always,
season.
But at the same time, it's like, hey, the studios look at, hey, they got the ratings we wanted. Let's green light the next season. Let's do this marketing campaign all over again. It worked.
Anyway, Fallout TV show. James and Blue, you have watched, not James, John and Blue have watched this, right?
Yes, I will clarify. I've not watched the entire thing yet. I'm watching every episode like week to week. Because that's just how I watch TV shows. But, yeah, I'm about halfway through it, though. And
I have seen all of it.
And
Okay.
Apart from
at the outset.
Go ahead.
Just at the outset. Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle.
Thumbs up.
How are we feeling? Thumbs up, John?
Thumbs up. With some grapes.
Okay. for people, I'm gonna be the audience surrogate of someone who doesn't know a lot about Fallout, but knows things like it's a video game series where it's 1950s vibe after the nuclear apocalypse and everybody's come out of the vaults, and then you like go around and you like usually try to find a family member. It seems to be like not every single game, but most of them seem to be centered around trying to find a family member in the post-apocalypse. But, like, so is there a particular, like, game that this is... Because they all take... All the Fallout games take place in different places.
This one is basically Fallout 5.
Okay, so it's, like, in a different location.
Different location, different story. If anything, it takes the hook of Fallout 3, where you're trying to find your father for the main character. But other than that, it's completely different.
It is like if they turned a Fallout game that doesn't exist into a show in, like, pretty one of the best ways possible. It made me want to play Fallout more.
If it helps at all, the show is canon to
the
game story.
It's just newest on the timeline. Mm-hmm. But it is canon and will affect things going forward from what I understand.
That's neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like we're finally getting like decent to good video game, not even adaptations, but just like stuff that started as video games being turned into movies and TV shows, and it not going terrible, right? Like, depending on how you vibe with it, like decent to good. Mm-hmm. And like the bad stuff is just as, you know, some of it is like, how much do you like? There are people, for example, who just don't vibe with the style of the Sonic mostly live action movies, right?
Yeah.
Like, but like, it's, they're not like even all the way back into like so bad it's good, like
it's
the
not
Mario.
Like they, it's not like they completely missed the mark, is what you're saying.
Or, and like, even things like the Legend of Zelda cartoon, right? Where like it's fun, but mostly because it's so not what the Legend of Zelda is really like, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's part, and it's goofy. But also, like, would people even like it if it wasn't a Legend of Zelda cartoon? It's like, the irony is almost part of it. And then you get, like, Mega Man cartoon, where that's, like, kind of in the middle, where, like, some parts are kind of good, but most of it's just really cheesy. But, like the Mario movie, I feel like, was just, like, solid. Right? Like, I think that's the worst you could say about it. It's, like, solid, does the source material justice, depends on the person whether or not it's your vibe. But, like... not inauthentic, right? I think that's the – maybe that's the thing.
Yeah.
Authenticity is very important in the modern era of internet content.
Yeah, that pretty much –
this is not internet content. I'm saying internet content has forced the idea of authenticity into the values of media consumption, right? Mario movie feels very authentic. The Fallout show sounds very authentic. It seems like there was a lot of coordination with the company, with Bethesda and like the people – what, Todd? That's his name, right?
Yeah.
Todd.
Mr. Howard.
Mr. Howard.
Yeah.
Definitely hype to have a win under his belt. I feel like Bethesda has been having some struggles
One thing. In
public consciousness, particularly with the last time Fallout did a thing.
Well, I mean, at least that one improved itself over time. But I will say that yeah, watching the show, it goes to show how much, like, a labor of love was put into it. How it's like, some of the CG looks great, but, like, the suits that you, like, the big suits are all, like, practical. They're, like, tangible things you can, like, people touch and feel. Good. And it's, like, and interact with and get into and whatnot. Like, damn! It looks so, so cool. Like, all the props look cool. The tone is right. Like, they translated the humor of the games, like, perfectly. Like, my only like real gripe is that if it's like some of the directing is not like clear, like when an action scene comes on per se, it's not like totally clear what exactly is happening. It's not because of like shaky cam or something, it's just because of like how stuff is like blocked and framed.
I think felt intentional. But like, if you mean in the first episode particularly,
We noticed it like a little bit in the first episode, but it didn't bother us then. But mainly in the third episode, when they were like just going for like when the sea monster attacks, she like for some reason she like turns around away from the lake, and I thought it was because she heard a roar from the background. But then I watched it again, and I'm like, oh yeah, wait, that's bizarre. Why she just turns away from the lake? It's so weird. Why would she do that?
Yeah. At least in the first episode, though, that felt intentional because it was, like, jarring and hectic and confusing, and I think that was on purpose. Mm-hmm.
But, it's like, whoever was the production designer on the show was, like, clearly a fan of the games, or at least, like, became a fan because of how much detail they put into everything. There's, like, not even, I wouldn't even say, like, Easter eggs, it's just, like, stuff you would expect from the show, and like even like writing wise, it feels like it's from the game.
They
itself.
Just
like,
there's made a, it real.
There's a great scene where she like where the main character like wanders into a home, and you just see like the fallout of like the nuclear explosion. You can just see like what these people were doing before. And it's like exactly like how in the games you just wander into a random area, and you can just pick apart from the set dressing. Like what happened here? Like what was going on? It was so cool.
Yeah, I feel like too, like an issue that you can run into when doing like remakes or like bringing something from one genre or one medium to another is like you can usually like Fallout, right? Is a response and an evolution, like the first game, right? And then the series itself. To a certain like style, right? Like you've got the 1950s style, and you've also got like games of that genre, right? And like the tropes of that, and especially when people are coming in fresh to just this property, and they're not like involved in the wider space of like the kinds of video games that Fallout is a part of, right?
Mm-hmm.
The greater genre of kind of like shooter survival post-apocalypse, you can kind of get like a too much like response purely out of just the actual game and not what the game was inspired by, right? Like you make a show that's just purely like, oh, we looked at cool Fallout things and made cool Fallout things, then you kind of lose some of it because Fallout isn't just responding to itself, right? It is pulling influence from all these different sources.
Yeah.
and you have to like do that same process.
Yeah.
Right? Like yeah, you said, that's... to like get the 1950s vibes in a different location. Otherwise you would get, I think, a sort of naive way of approaching Fallout would have been to like take Fallout 4 and make Fallout 4 the TV show, where I don't think that would work very well because Fallout is so much like it has so much branching narrative to it, right? That like nailing down a narrative wouldn't feel right. But since
what is canon,
right? But because you're just doing a completely new, you know, TV show world, you can still have the vibe of like, this is kind of what a Fallout playthrough is like. But you're not like saying, oh, that thing that you did in your video game that's like in your mind about what happened, that's not real. Like, right? So I think it takes a certain amount of maturity and understanding to know. And, you know, there's a chance that it was just luck. I don't know these people. But it seems like the kind of decision that you would make intentionally if you understood, like, not just, hey, here are the Fallout video games, but, like, what makes these games good in the context of video games in general, right? Whereas, like, with Sonic, when they got Sonic 3 coming out, like, the cool part about Sonic 3 is going to be seeing the Sonic Adventure 2 battle story play out on the big screen, right? Like, there, the more direct retelling will be a bonus because, like, that was so much of the vibe of the game. Yeah. Yep. And the gameplay itself is kind of like, this is fun, but it's not what I want to see in a movie, right? I don't want to see Shadow the Hedgehog playing a Sonic level. I want to see him shout at Sonic the Hedgehog. I want to see him get in a fight with the government.
I want to see the president, right? With like, the picture of Sonic on his desk.
Yes, I want to see the president. I'll settle for the mayor. I understand that the context of the Sonic the Hedgehog movies, the president might be too much. If we want to bring it to the president, I'm not opposed.
Yeah.
If we want to scale that up.
Yeah, you're right, though. The Fallout show definitely like captures like the feeling of the game where you like you come for the aesthetics and tone. Actually, no. Actually, yeah, you come for the aesthetics and tone, but you stay for the world building and just exploration and lore. That's essentially what it boils down to. Like appeal of Fallout.
To do what I always do and bring it back to Mega Man. This is why I feel like Mega Man in non-video game media has struggled, because people just see Mega Man.
Joe, have you played any more games other than Pokemon and Mega Man?
I just talked about playing Mario and Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah, you gave up on Banjo-Kazooie.
I played the video games. I'm just saying that, like, there has not been this sense of, like, understanding what makes Mega Man good. Why people like it. What it is that is interesting. People keep wanting to write iRobot. And it's like, we already have iRobot. Mega Man is not iRobot.
Dear Game Cola faithful, if it has not become abhorrently clear, Joe will not stop this podcast until we have a good Mega Man adaptation on TV or not. Movie.
That might, if there was a movie, I don't think I would end the podcast. But I would have one less thing to talk about, that's for sure. If there was a good Mega Man movie that understood what was good about it.
What is good about Mega Man, Joe?
This will be the whole rest of the podcast. We can't.
It's already been most of the podcast, it feels like.
I've not talked about Mega Man that much. Are you saying this podcast has already been most of the podcast? Then yes, I agree.
Yes.
This podcast has not been most of Mega Man.
That's what I'm saying.
For those listening, I
worded that very poorly. I apologize. I meant it's already been most of a podcast is what I meant to say.
Yes.
For those listening, I'm going to explain the joke that just happened. Blue asked Joe what was good about Mega Man, and then I respectfully left the Discord call.
That's true. I was there.
Anyway, that's the cool thing. This TV show, video games, and I want more. I think we can do it now. I think we've figured it out. I think we've figured out that you can do it, and you can be good at it. And I'm ready for more. I don't know what. I mean, obviously Mega Man, but like, what else? Like, what's the next hit? What's the next big hit?
Of like a show or a movie?
Anything.
I could totally.
Four is yours.
After this, I could totally see Amazon greenlighting an Elder Scrolls series.
I think they specifically said that Bethesda wasn't really planning on doing anymore.
I mean, Bethesda's not, but Amazon could be breathing down their necks and be like, hey.
I don't know. Do they have that kind of influence on that relationship?
I mean, it's Amazon going against, talking to Microsoft, so I'm sure there's definitely like numbers that support the decision that some net suits are talking about.
I don't think it would be good if their hearts weren't in it, right? Like, I don't think it would be put together. And I don't know. I feel like Elder Scrolls doesn't quite have this, like, it's good and it's a good vibe when you're playing it, but it's not like nearly as visually independently iconic as Fallout.
Oh yeah, but I think,
and I feel like you need that for like the TV show element, otherwise it's gonna just someone who doesn't know, even like even if you know about Skyrim, like, right, you see someone wearing the Fallout suit in a promotional image and you're like, ding, monkey brain, I know what that is. Right, and then you read over and you can see, oh, Fallout TV show, right? Whereas like Skyrim, like, you're just gonna have guy in fantasy armor. And maybe some dragons, right? But then it's still going to be like a fantasy show, number 327.
Especially on Amazon when they already have a Lord of the Rings show.
Right, yeah. I don't think it has the same immediate pull, right? And Scott, like, even like people who haven't played Fallout, right? Like, the visual iconography is enough of a hook, I feel like, to bring you in to a TV show, even if you haven't played the video game. If you haven't played Skyrim, if you haven't played The Elder Scrolls, it's just going to look like another fantasy thing. And it's not bad necessarily, certainly not when it's a video game, but I don't think it has quite the same pull as like, hey, let's look at a big budget live action version of Fallout's visual design, right?
I bet you Square Enix is like twiddling their thumbs thinking like, all right, how can we make another Final Fantasy movie that people will actually like this time?
Yes, if you could, yeah, I feel like you could, there's enough there, you could make it work. I don't know how you would do it. I would not be the person to ask how to do it. And it is weird, right? Because it's...
I'm just saying...
There's not even, like... Fallout has a shared continuity, even though it's, like, completely different characters, right? It would be hard. And if, you know, Final Fantasy VII feels like it would have been the best candidate, and the remake, Redux, reevaluation, reintegrate into society... games, I feel like, are serving that cultural purpose, and now it would feel redundant to do like a Final Fantasy VII movie.
Final Fantasy VII redundant.
Isn't it going to be a Sims movie?
Take notes, Nomura.
Yeah, a Sims movie?
That's what I heard.
Oh, yeah. Wait, that was.
Wouldn't that just be reality TV? But
No, it's a movie, James. Movie. I said movie.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Margot Robbie's producing it. That's so weird. I think it's a Warner Brothers thing.
I don't know. If you can do it, I worry that it is just going to be almost worse than, hey, I'm just going to look at, you know, the video games for the source material and not really try to understand its like outstanding cultural impact and where it slots into society and like gaming culture. I'm just going to look at the source material. It's almost going to be like worse than that. There's like, I'm going to look at the Barbie movie and just try to do something like that, but with The Sims. That would be my concern. I'm not saying that is what's going to happen, but that feels like...
Did people not like the Barbie movie?
People did like the Barbie movie. I'm not saying really that the Barbie movie is bad. Okay, I'm saying just trying to copy and paste the Barbie movie vibes onto Sims without really understanding.
The thing is...
Like, it gives you enough to like make a movie so you wouldn't realize that it doesn't really work. Because I don't think the implication of that is like... bringing something Simsy into like the real world, and I feel like making Sims more realistic makes it less funny and more horrible, right? Like you have to have, and I don't know if you can accomplish this with like a narrative movie or TV show even, like the things that happen in The Sims are like awful. And it's funny because they're little cartoon characters who don't matter. But like if you make a TV show out of it where it's like it needs to be real.
Is there going to be an
episode? I don't know. Like, you can have cool stories in The Sims. There are lots of blogs that are just, like, people describing events happening with interstitched screenshots of The Sims. And those are interesting. But, like, part of the funny thing about those is that you understand the broader context of everything that's happening in The Sims. And it's so super localized. And I don't know. It just seems tricky to pull that all together, especially into a movie. Like, it almost feels like that should be, like, YouTube shorts. Like, Sims-based YouTube shorts would actually, I think, be great. It's like, live-action
I just want a Sims series.
There's one part that you have not mentioned. The dialogue.
Simish.
Buddy.
Simish.
Buddy, Simlish. Yeah, Simlish. That, like, you're just going to, like, it's just going to be, like, oh, yeah, like, the people singing in the background are going to be speaking Simlish. Sims person goes into the real world and weird Sims things happen. Like, I don't know. I think I've actually come up with the best idea, which is you have a live-action series of, like, YouTube shorts or TikToks or whatever, right? And those are... You have different actors each time, and it's just referencing some funny quirk about The Sims world in a minute context. I think that is, like, kind of the ideal way to experience The Sims in, like, a narrative setting. It's, like, these bite-sized, a part 1, 2, 3 level of, like, investment before moving on to this other new quirky thing.
Yo, this stranger just walked into my house and set himself on fire in my fireplace, and then he... just turned into a urn of ashes in the middle of my floor. Because that's what happens. That's what happens in Sims 2.
Yep.
I feel like that's the only format where you could get away with, hey, I can't get out of the pool because this ladder is gone.
Oh, God.
And then what happens after that, right? In a movie, that would just be horrifying.
That'd just be a horror movie.
It wouldn't be funny. It's funny in the video game, right?
You can lampshade it when it's in a video game.
It just, like, the framing of it works in the video game, and I just don't know how you would do that in a live-action movie. Unless it was, like, so short and, like you know, 15 seconds to a minute where, like, that's the whole bit of it, right? Like, person doesn't have enough time to be, like, a person in your brain. They can just be this funny Sims character. But the more time you have to spend with
that could work.
It feels bad instead
what
of
if
funny.
They do that, do what you're saying, but they... do like 2 hours of it and then put it in theaters.
I feel bad for the Sims players who are having to listen to us Sims playing what we think about the Sims, having the four of us, I think, never played these video games.
I have not played a single Sims game.
The entire scene I just talked about happened to me when I was playing Sims 2 like last month.
Yep. Right, but have you been playing, do you play Sims like the Sims people on the podcast play Sims, John?
Not like Anna, but like I play like casually.
Well, I don't know. I make them happy, I live my life through them, and then I ruin it so I can try and futilely understand my own inability to be happy. Is that why Anna does it?
You would have to ask Anna. And on that lovely note, I think, does anybody have any other video game things they want to talk about before we wrap up?
Marvel Rivals.
Marvel Rivals.
Yeah.
What are they rivaling?
The time, I think. Not
who are the rivals?
Who is racist and sexist. That's
at the same time?
Oh, no.
Not in this one, but it is a time.
At this time, everyone's only racist or sexist at, like, alternating.
Yep. Yeah.
Racist by day, sexist by night.
Oh no. Oh man. That's like, you know, having a supervillain be your alter ego, except that they're both villains. you're just different villains.
Also, that sounds like a fun concept.
Real actually. Quick, also, I saw recently someone on the internet say that we were talking about the sim language, and they were saying that they figured out what it was. It's just you speak Italian, but with an American accent. Like, so, and they actually tried doing it, and it actually sounds very convincing. But I saw another video where it was resident. Like, I think that works with any foreign language. Like, if you speak any foreign language with an American accent, like a heavy American accent, it does sound like Sim speak.
As the resident Game Cola Italian. What are you talking about?
I don't know. You tried speaking Italian, but with like a heavy American accent, like just deliberately, like like pronouncing it as if it's English words. Like,
I mean, John's last name is 60% pizza.
You're right.
That's the best way to describe that I've ever heard.
So what are the Marvels rivaling? Are they fighting? Is it like, are they doing a civil war again? But like on slightly more friendly terms, so they're just rivals, not enemies?
We don't really know the story details yet. Something about the timelines are being messed with, and so things are weird. Loki's in charge of Asgard.
I'm so tired.
It's Marvel opposite day.
It's just... if that's what I'm doing right now. But like, I feel like the multiple timelines, multiple universes thing has just become an excuse for people to write things that don't make sense. And you're like, it's just an alternate universe. And it's like, okay, then nothing means anything.
Gameplay-wise, it's supposed to be Marvel Overwatch or Team
There's
Fortress.
There's a map where they combine Tokyo with Nueva York City. No, what was it? I don't know. Yeah, Nueva York City. And that's real, I think, because it's Tokyo 2099.
I don't, like, this isn't what happens. Like, guys, this isn't what happens. Right? Like, cities don't, like, combine like this. They just get, like, copied and pasted, and it often doesn't work out, right?
I don't know.
Like,
I watched Big Hero 6. It seemed to be fine.
But that's like, I'm just saying that, like, it's weird that people keep writing this like this is something that happens. Like, two big cities that are on, like, opposite sides of the planet, sometime in the future, combined somehow in a way where it makes sense to make their names
squished
together.
Just because of the time thing. I don't think that's what it is.
But what is the... You can't just
How
say,
does the
oh,
timeline
it's an alternate
change
history.
Merge cities together?
It's...
Like, there are some where I can kind of see...
Okay, so the Asgard
where
one,
it's
not
from.
Asgard, it's Yggdrasil. It's both the Yggdrasil tree and Asgard, which, while adjacent normally, are not the same thing. So it's more than just time... is forward, and now we have a weird place. It's, we have weird things happening in both time and space.
I still have to agree with Joe that it just sounds like an excuse for the writers to do something completely different than what people are expecting.
We have a podcast where we read fan fiction where Shadow the Hedgehog and Eevee hang out.
Right, I'm not saying that necessarily,
fun of it, Blue,
like
because it's ridiculous and silly, and that's why it's a
and
good
it's,
podcast.
And it's also like it's one like I think it's also a matter if you're like if you're doing like fan fiction under the context of fan fiction, it's one thing. Like if you're like self aware and you're like, yes, this is clearly not meant to be played off as serious at all, and we're not even trying to pretend that it is. We're just rolling with this completely different scenario just fine, and, like, we know it's weird. That's one thing. But I don't know. If, it, there's I don't know how seriously this takes itself, but whenever it's anything with Marvel, it feels like a lot of the time, you know, things can be, there can be tongue-in-cheek moments, but generally speaking, the premise of a story or game or piece of media from Marvel, et cetera, and in that scope, in that scale, doesn't, I have a hard time envisioning that as something that is conducted entirely, like, self-aware and tongue-in-cheek.
Is this also, like,
you mean you also Tokyo? Haven't seen Across the Spider-Verse, so.
That's true. I have not seen that one. But I would believe right, that
there's a cultural connection between India and the United States through the UK.
Mumbai,
and they kind of like
Mumbai. Or,
I don't remember how they combine the city.
It's Mumbatan.
Mumbatan. Okay, that's what it was. Yeah. But like there's a thread there that you can kind of fill in the gaps with your brain. And even like, you know, like Japan and California, right? Los Angeles.
San Francisco.
San
Francisco.
Oh, something like that.
Right?
Yeah.
Like there's like cultural mix up there, right? Like they're on the other side, like they're on opposite sides of the ocean from each other, but like the ocean is the main thing in between them. Greetings, Game Cola faithful. Joseph Martin here from the future, here to apologize for the next part of the podcast where I continually say Nuevo York instead of Nueva York. My only defense, small as it may be, is that there's a real Laurel Yanny thing going on with the way Blues Mike picks up the way he says Nueva. And I legitimately thought he was saying Nuevo and just copying that. But also, Nuevo is just wrong. That's not how you say that in Spanish. So it bothers me. It probably bothers you if you understand it. Hopefully this makes it bother you and me a little less. Again, very sorry. Continuing with the podcast now. Right? Nuevo York. I can, there's a large, I'm in New York right now. There's a large Spanish-speaking population. Like, you can understand, like, how little things changing could, like, make certain things happen a certain way and fill in the blanks with your brain. But, like, I don't understand how you get New York and Tokyo specifically to the point where they would combine the names where it's already Nuevo York as well. Like, there's a third, there's, like, three elements mixing here. Hmm. I don't understand.
In 2099, they will change the name of New York to Nueva York. I don't remember why.
Joe, to put this in terms that you understand, in Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, there is a merging of Asgard and X from Mega Man.
Like X, the character?
Capcom no, like Infinite. The city. The city.
Oh.
That he takes
Joe,
place.
Did you play MVC Infinite?
Yes.
I played some Marvel versus Capcom game, but probably not that one.
Okay. Well,
yeah, definitely not the one that nobody played.
That is, I think, what it is, roughly.
Like, it's called New York because there's a place called York, and they're like, this is the new one. And also, it was called New Amsterdam before, and we wanted to keep, like, the new vibe. But we're going to make it a British place instead of an Amsterdam place. And then Tokyo, I don't remember. It means something. I don't remember.
Really?
I should know. But it means, like, though, it translates to something, right? So you can't just, like, mash them together. Like, then it doesn't mean anything anymore.
Yeah.
That's not how you name things. People just go out into the woods of Pennsylvania and name something like Oxford. And it's just like, what does it have to do with Oxford? Nothing. It's just, I like Oxford, and I decided to name my town Oxford. It doesn't have, it's just in the middle of nowhere.
Joe, can then you explain why there is a Springfield in pretty much every state in America?
Yes, because there's lots of, everywhere in America, you have fields that are nice in spring. That's it.
What? I doubt there's one in friggin' Springfield, Arizona.
Maybe it's they just like spring and fields. There's a field,
there's
spring.
Yeah.
There's spring in Arizona. It doesn't feel like spring here.
Well,
but
there's it's called a junkyard. It's a field full of springs.
That could also work. James is thinking outside the box. It could also be like other parts of Pennsylvania. Well, they'll just name things like King of Prussia. That's just the name of a town. King of Prussia.
All right, so what
I'm not saying that you can't have weird town names. I'm just saying that, like, you can't. I'm not saying that you can't have weird town names. I'm saying that you can't just have weird town names. You have to think about it.
All right, so Joe, so what if what happens?
It doesn't feel like they thought about it.
All right,
so maybe I'm wrong.
Joe, so what happens when some timeline, like dimensional junk happens, and then that's what merges them, and people are like, "What is going on?"
Like. Well, like
it's the inciting incident.
Sure, okay, but like the name is a concept, right? Like the name does not physically get merged. People would still call the city something, and it wouldn't just like how would they know that this merging happened? Where there was like is the
well, that's
is the,
the thing. Has the history universe, of the they didn't they, it has just always been this way.
But then there would still have to be like a logical causality of history, right? There's a you go to the library in Nuevo Tokyo or whatever it's called.
Yeah,
and in the library there'd be a book from like a 200 years ago, and it would say this is what the city is called. And it would have to make sense if you're going to retroactively like make a timeline that led to this existing the way that it does.
Yeah,
or it'll be like one of those places with weird names, and it will just have a weird name for no reason.
But why? But any place that has a weird name has a reason for it to have a weird name. Besides, just
true?
This is giving an art. Like, I mean, even if it's like. I'm kind of with Joe here in that, like, it almost feels like having these names that are hybrids of existing real-world locations.
Isn't there a place in America where, like, they don't remember, or it, like, was, like, because someone lost a bet or something, and so they named the place something stupid?
Well, but of a place as big and significant as...
the world.
Yeah, it's, like, something that significant, like... It almost feels like if you don't have some kind of lore, like long backstory reason for why you specifically, like, why couldn't it have just kept being called Nuevo York, even if it has like a bunch of influence from this, because like one came before the other, or it was called Tokyo,
got bought for $24 originally, so it doesn't seem that significant to me.
Blue, I'm sorry. I think your video game is going to be bad because of this. I don't know what to tell you.
Your Overwatch clone is not going to make any sense because the concept of merging two cities together just raises too many questions.
Yeah, no, that's a deal breaker. I think you've heard it here first. Marvel Rivals is going to be a bad game.
This is why they didn't release it. Where is it?
Yeah, you made Marvel Rival. This is why we're so mad at you specifically. This is why our anger is justified and makes sense to spend this much of the podcast on, is because you personally made this video game and made this decision that we don't like, that I've somehow convinced. I'm like, Blue, the real talk, I am surprised that James and John are on my side about this. I thought I was going to be the odd one out, and I feel a little bad that now we're all ganging up on you.
No,
I thought
this was going to be Joseph said something I'm just to annoy the three of you.
I'm the neutral party. I'm on the neutral side, plan. to be clear,
you're just
because it's like I've been dealing with this Marvel.
Card.
I've been dealing with this like timeline, like comic book garbage for years, and I'm just like accepting it at this point. I'm like, all right, whatever.
I'm just saying that I set this up as everybody gets mad at Joseph because, like, when Joseph says even Steven, right? Like, that was supposed to be a setup like that, and just kind of backfired a little bit. And so I just want to apologize to you personally. This is not how I saw this playing out when I started.
I've been planning this for years, so.
Did we, like, I feel like we almost completely overtook what you wanted to say about Marvel Rivals.
There's not much to go on with it other than the premise, and it's just an Overwatch clone.
Say that review code, or the, not review codes, alpha codes go out soon-ish. Sometime within the next 4 days of when you're listening to this podcast.
So you're going to try to get in on that?
Yeah, and I was thinking of maybe streaming it on GameCola, but I think It sounds like my fellow Game Cola host would murder me if I did that. So.
Yeah, I think we could talk about it more off the podcast, but yeah, I think it's probably going to be a deal breaker. Maybe just censor the name of the city. Would that be better or worse? The city that shall not be named.
That sounds racist. But not sexist, so...
That's true. It's only one. We haven't done the...
You take what you can get.
It's not the double whammy.
I think we're, like, at end podcast time.
Are we?
I think. It feels like it.
Any of us talked about games we've been playing?
We have. I've been trying to work this in more naturally, because... I feel like at the end of the podcast, it kind of just becomes people like talking. It's not like a discussion, right? Like we're not yelling at each other like we do about Tokyo and Evan Steven.
I do feel right? I do feel that sometimes during this section where I'm just talking about a game I've been playing. I'm like, is anyone gonna interject with you a want question to or something? What the hell?
Discuss about a game you've been playing. That's fair game you've been playing.
Because Sad Beasts is still good.
Well, I mean, like, that's kind of the opposite of what I was talking about. Yeah. Like, happy for you.
Good talk.
It doesn't seem like anyone has one of those things that I said about video games they've been playing in recent times.
I mean, like, I've played a couple games. I hadn't come up with some long discussion to have about them other than just...
Yeah, we long.
Okay. Oh, okay. Then I've actually got a couple things to talk about. I've been playing a couple different Final Fantasy games, actually, for the first time. I'm playing Final Fantasy VI on my Super Nintendo at the request of a friend. He's kind of not totally walking me through it, but kind of just sort of guiding me along a little bit and just watching me as I play and talking about stuff, because it's his favorite game in the series. And I'm really enjoying that so far. I just I feel like it's okay to say this, like, the name of this scene that I saw, because it's like a really, like, one that people talk about constantly. I just saw the opera scene.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you get to the part where they sing?
Yeah, I did. I actually just got to that. I had been, again, somehow I have managed to stay completely blind to a lot of these games that everybody just knows about, including the parts that collectively, like, have osmosis-ed through the internet.
I just know that singing happens and it's, like, important and meaningful. And I think I have actually, like, heard what happens in the scene.
I hadn't heard.
I just remember that they're singing.
I hadn't heard any of it. I had only heard it being described as the opera scene with no further context whatsoever. So I had,
like, in Parasite Eve.
I don't know anything about Parasite Eve.
Like that.
There's an opera scene.
Oh, okay.
It's the sequel to a Parasite Adam.
No, it's actually the sequel.
I think that would be the companion game. Like they're side by side. All right. The other one is Final Fantasy VII Remake, not Rebirth, the second game in the sort of series that they're doing, but the original Final Fantasy VII Remake. I've been playing that on my PS5, and I've been enjoying that one a lot as well. I've really been enjoying both of these games, but, like, obviously, they're so wildly different games that it's kind of hard to explain exactly what it is. I think that my favorite thing about Final Fantasy VI so far is that I like all of the characters. It seems like equal parts lighthearted and serious and somber and interesting. There's a lot of, you know, intrigue in the story. It's kind of got me hooked just now. Like, things have started ramping up in the story plot-wise. But the characters are really interesting to get to know slowly, and also fighting, like, everyone feels so super powerful right now, because we've got characters who are doing all sorts of, like, crazy martial arts moves. One of them just has a bunch of crazy gadgets that he pulls out that do a bunch of different effects, and then we have really strong magic casters, and then just everyone in combat feels very unique. The same thing for Final Fantasy VII Remake, actually. Everybody feels very unique because it's a real-time battle system. So it's actually more of an action gameplay. And so that's very interesting to get used to. The music is phenomenal. Because I've never played the original Final Fantasy VII, so I know that some people are like, you know, the game, they have extended the game significantly. Like, this is a full-length game that is made up of the content of what was, I think, like a maybe 4 or 5 hour section in the original Final Fantasy VII, from what I've been told.
For context, I think the first remake is just disc one of the original Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, so I'm assuming that there's going to be three, but it's just fascinating to me because it's like, you know, everybody's like, man, I feel like the game gets very long and it's very long-winded, and I'm not a huge fan of how much they expanded it. And I'm like, well, without the context of having played the original game, to me, it feels pretty good so far. I'm about 10 hours in, but I feel like maybe I'm about a quarter to a third of the way through it, which if it only ends up being like a 30 or 40 hour game, I feel like that would actually be a good length for whatever I'm currently experiencing.
For part one.
Yeah, just for part one. And which is crazy to think about, because like I imagine that the original Final Fantasy VII was probably a 40, 50 hour game at most in its entirety. And the fact that now we have almost that length for just a third of it is crazy to think about. But again, so far, it doesn't feel like the pacing is too slow. Everything feels mostly well thought out. Like, the pacing is a little bit slow, but not too slow. But yeah, very good game.
Oh, yeah. So the next Nancy Drew game was announced to be released next week. So I've been kind of going back, like, watching some old YouTube videos and whatnot of a certain game called A Veteran, but I've also went on eBay and I bought the DVD version, not even like a console or PC version, of Curse of Blackmoor Manor, and it's bizarre to see how like they like shortened the game down to like, and they rearranged some scenes. It's like, so like one like end game scare happened at the very beginning. I'm like, what the heck? And then the way you move around is actually, it's funny. I put in my PS5 and it's like, oh wow, they retroactively ported this game to PS5 17 years ago. What foresight they had.
Side note, Argelfunth is spelled exactly how you would think.
Yeah, exactly how it sounds specifically.
I was giving them more credit for their brain power, but take that away from
it's
them.
Almost like Michael Gray, Argelfump, has a podcast related to Game Cola by a certain editor emeritus whose name rhymes with Pevin Frevin.
Does it though?
I don't think that's true.
Yeah, no, the DVD version's very...
Oh, I rocked. It's in my closet. Anyway, what were you saying?
Yeah, the DVD version's a lot slower than it is playing on console or on PC, because it's like you can just, on PC, you can just click and she goes there, like, she goes like one step ahead of you, like instantly, and you can just like go around like the entire map like really fast. In the DVD version, if you hit forward, it plays a video of Nancy stepping forward, and I'm like, oh God.
Oh no.
So what would normally take me like less than 5 seconds to get from the bedroom down to the basement takes a full like 7 minutes. Like, oh God, what did I do starting this? So I'm not sure if I'm gonna finish it or not, but it's, and also it's like, because it's a DVD, it's like the music stops whenever you take a step. And then it, like, has to load in the music again to play.
Because it's basically just skipping, right? It's basically, like, when you go to the menu and you, like, pick the scene.
Yes. That's exactly
it's
what
basically
it is.
Using that.
It's a very interesting idea. I'm not sure what else they could have done to make it, like, faster paced or streamline it.
I think I actually know, John. It's they could have not done this not and done made that. You buy a real regular video game.
But they want to expand the consoles and other things now. It's like they made a Wii version of White Wolf of High School Creek, and it has the same loading issue. It's
that's just bad. They shouldn't have done that. They shouldn't have done a lot of these things, I think. I think that's the answer to your question.
I've also been playing, speaking of bad video games, I've also been playing Tomb Raider Angel of Darkness which is very tough because my PS3 has a weird like disc reading issue where it can't read some PS2 games now because the laser. And it's like, we thought we got it down where it's like, oh, we should just play a PS2 game that does work for a while so the laser like warms up and then put in the one that doesn't work. That method stopped working like this weekend, so I'm out of luck on how to play this horrible game.
But, yeah. Sounds like you should just give up.
Yeah, do you want my game collection? I'm selling it. I'm selling it for.
That's a little bit of catastrophizing there, John. That's not healthy.
You said give up.
See the extrapolation you did there? Not healthy. I'm a registered licensed therapist, which one of those is an actual word you would use with therapist, so that's how you know I've covered all my bases.
I'm not a lying therapist.
But you know what's good? Thanking people for listening to the Game Cola podcast.
Is that good or polite?
Did they? You can't prove that.
I mean, I think by definition, if they hear me thank them, then they listen to it, right? And also, I'm collectively also addressing you guys because you listened to the podcast you were on, right? You listened to the things that people said. Therefore, you've listened and you heard your own voice. So you've listened to this podcast. So definitely at least 4 people have listened to this Game Cold podcast. Maybe 3.998 because John did disconnect for a few seconds that one time.
I did have to go and grab some water for a minute as well. So 3.75.
3.75. We'll have it at that. I wish YouTube won't give us the revenue for that though. That's too bad.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, check us out on our actual internet website, gamecola.net, where you've got podcast articles, you've got review articles, you've got stuff that goes all the way back to 2002 about video games.
We just turned 22 last month.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sing the song. And don't sing it because we don't like copyright.
And we've got a YouTube channel, gc.net, the letter G, the letter C, the word dot, the word net, where we've got videos and live streams. We did a birthday celebration live stream with the Nintendo Switch Online for Nintendo 64 games. We will probably do that more as time marches forward. Try to do some multiplayer, 4-player things with that eventually. And we got the Discord. Find the Discord in the YouTube description or on the website. There's invite links for stuff like that, and you can come and hang out with us, suggest podcast topics, or just talk to us about video games, or become a super fan and join us on streams for like super fan multiplayer games. It's a good time. I've given up on social media. It doesn't exist anymore. It's collapsing.
Finally?
We're living your own little community bubble here.
I don't know what changed, but
that's the closest thing I will allow to a parasocial relationship in this community.
Yep.
Is you enjoy being on the Discord.
It's a good place.
And the links work now.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
That's helpful.
Yeah.
It's a helpful way.
Because I realized, I think it was like 2 months ago that I realized that apparently at some point the Discord link we've been using, we don't know how long ago, but potentially like a significantly long time ago because it's no longer in the audit log that it was invalidated, but the Discord link we've just been copying and pasting this whole time has been invalid and just is dead and air is out. So if you've been trying to join the Discord for all this time that we've been telling you to join it and you've been getting an error message, try now. It should probably work.
Yeah, I think I might need to grab that from the YouTube video because I don't know if I've updated that for my like template for the podcast editing.
Okay.
I will fix that. But yes, come to the Discord or just, there's ways where if you DM me on Twitter, I'll still probably get an email about it and I can tell you how to get to the Discord. Mm-hmm. Or, I don't know, can you search Game Cola on the Discord? I don't even know if that's how that works.
I don't believe so. We're not considered a community server, because we don't have the qualifications to get the whatever banner that is.
Join the Discord so we can get those qualifications.
I'm going to be honest. Well, I'll talk about this off the podcast.
Well, you don't want to be your own.
No, I kind of like it here. I like it as a join by, like, because, you know, I...
Yeah, we don't want people to ruin
also
it.
Also reduces the risk of spam bots and all sorts of other things. I like how cozy it is here. No, I think
if we started getting, like, a bunch of people on the Discord, like, just randos...
We uploaded this video with a fixed one, and then we suddenly have 1,000 more people.
We would just... Yeah. I would just put, like, this is the quarantine. Like, this is just where people show up. And then, like, if you're cool, you can actually, like, hang out. But this is, like, the hidden place where, like, you can find people, you can end up, and you can get integrated. But, and then it's, like, it's just lawless there. People will just do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. And we'll just put in bots and ban people as we need to.
Ugh. That sounds like too much effort.
No, it'll be all automatic. We wouldn't actually spend any time in the public channel, I think is what would happen.
At that point, why bother having it? Why not just leave the server closed off so that only the most dedicated folks...
James, engagement.
Engagement. All right. Inflating our numbers. Gotcha.
Yes. I want to see the number go up. That's why I play all these RPGs that we've been talking about. Number go up. Number go up. Just like we went from 176 to 177. Mm. One step closer to podcast 200, where I'll have to think of something cool.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
You'll have to.
I have to
multiple
wait.
Years.
Darn. That's how it works.
It's 23 episodes, which is probably going to take 2 years.
Oh.
Because there'll probably be one more month where we do like what we did last year with the pizza and the comics.
Jeez.
And... There'll be JD5. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Game Cola Podcast. Have a wonderful time of day, wherever it is, whenever it is you are listening to this podcast, and we will see you next month. Goodbye!
Bye.
Goodbye! Goodbye.
Yeah. Oh, I feel significantly better. I feel so much better after this podcast.
I'm glad I helped.
Yes.
I can't believe Blue cured James's depression.
I did, single-handedly.
Whoa, who said anything about cured?
I made a video game with...
You said you were cured?
No, I didn't. I did not say that. You are a liar, and I have audio proof.
Audio proof right here. Look, it's I'm cured. I just played it right now.
Objection.
There's a sound bite. You didn't need to do that. You just edited it in.
I'm out of my recording, so I don't know how well that was caught.